Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:15 p.m. That is Central Time today, September 28th. And 5-year yields popped above 1% in here today, so that was the bit of a catalyst for significant sell-offs right across the equity sector. And when we then just go back and look at this on a longer term chart, we can see clearly that there's a well-defined range. There was a rounding characteristic to the base formation in 2020. It broke out at the beginning of this year, spent most of the year ranging, and now it looks like it is starting to trend higher. So we have a first step above the base, which is being completed on the upside. So this is beginning to raise the specter that inflationary pressures are rising and that the Fed is behind the curve in terms of keeping up with those inflationary pressures, or really doing very much to curtail them. So it holds out the prospect that the US government is going to have to start paying a lot more towards servicing its debt. And that's on top of all of the additional spending plans that have been permissioned over the course of the last year. And on top of all of that, the well-known fact that there are massive unfunded liabilities, and not least in the Social Security sector, which is due to run out of money within the decade. So there is obviously a lot to play with here in terms of inflationary pressures and the need to ensure that borrowing costs stay low. And yet there's still the Federal Reserve talking about raising interest rates, stopping their quantitative easing program. And then you have the whole pantomime of the federal government trying to get the debt limit raised, and how all of that is going to be achieved. So certainly there's plenty of things that are weighing on stocks. And of course, then there's what's going on in the energy sector. We'll come to that in a moment. But what I think is particularly relevant here is that with the 5-year yield breaking on the upside, the NASDAQ is pulling back. And it has now hit a new reaction low. Now it's off the low for the day, and we're in the region of the lows from back in August. But I think there are a couple of things that are worth pointing out. And the first is that the pattern of activity since May of this year has been a pullback in the middle of the month and subsequently a pop on the upside. And that was particularly relevant for the S&P 500. So it pulled back in May right around the expiry of the mid-month options and then rebounded. And subsequently moved on to a new high and then pulled back again in the middle of June, did the same thing in July, the same thing in August, and then pulled back from the beginning of September into the middle of the month and rebounded slightly, but then pulled back sharply again in here today. So now the big question for investors is whether we've had an inconsistency. The first inconsistency was the size of the pullback. It was larger than anything we've seen since October of last year, so there's that. Then we have the failure of this buying the dip strategy, which has been working for 5 consecutive months. So if it's going to function, then we're going to have to see a very substantial rebound in buying power tomorrow. And that would certainly help to help bring down yields as well. So there's obviously the big determination about just how much inflation are we likely to see. Now, when we think about the energy sector, oil prices got all the way up to $80 in here today, but then paused. So we've had a meaningful run-up over the course of the last week, and the price is now pausing in the region of the $80 area. And that's not surprising, because $80 is a big psychological level. And then we can also think about the significant accelerations that we've had in the natural gas price. Natural gas in the USA was well off its peak in here today. It got all the way up to test the $6 area, and we haven't seen the $6 level tested since 2014, and then it pulled back sharply from that point. So I think everybody understands that we've had this incredible advance going from 3 to 6. And the big challenge for natural gas consumers right now is that the shale drillers haven't been making money, and they've had access to liquidity cut off to them. So, in other words, they've had financial discipline imposed upon them by their creditors. So, they've been reluctant to invest heavily in additional supply, and that's contributed to the price increases. But of course, the price increase will start to encourage that supply into the market, because there's the vast majority of drillers can make money at $5. And when we think about the futures curve, well, it's possible to hedge out right now to about $3.75. You can also see that this is incredibly cyclical. So the time to hedge is around this time. Let me see if I can pull down this so we can see the dates. You can see that it's around this time every year that we start to get these pops on the upside. So what it would suggest then is that there is the potential at least for some hedging, and that hedging even out to 2023 would be akin to prices further out as well. So we can just simply think about not so much the price of $6 encouraging new supply, but that even out to the October period of or and December period of next year, it's possible to hedge out to $4. So that's plenty of money to fund new drilling operations. Then we can also think about the UK natural gas price, which has been explosive on the upside, but it's also losing consistency. We've had a loss of momentum following the acceleration on the upside, and then it popped above the 200 level in here today and wasn't able to hold it. So now the big question is whether it's going to follow through on the downside tomorrow. Obviously, there are very significant disruptions to the global economy because of what's going on in the UK, in Europe, in China. We haven't had the same degree of energy uncertainty in these countries in years. Even during the big commodity bull market of the early 2000s, where prices were racing higher and prices for oil in particular were well in excess of $100 after the credit crisis. And that wasn't particularly because of just an inability in the supply chain to get the product to people. There was an understanding that there was a security in the energy sector, that the supply chain was perfectly secure. It was only a question of whether you could afford it or not. Whereas in the current period of time, it's the supply chain is contributing to the problems. And the full force of the UK government is being brought to bear to ensure that there is ample supply of gasoline for the domestic market. But this is inevitably going to create a protest movement. And we can just think about the political idealism that has been introduced to commodity markets over the course of the last 30 years. Because I remember as a sixth grader learning about the EEC and the wine lakes and the butter mountains, and subsequently seeing the arguments around the GATT agreement and what that meant in terms of removing subsidies from farmers in the West and in North America, or it's so Western Europe and North America, and that basically handed the global agricultural sector to Brazil, and The farmers all over the rest of the world didn't really benefit. Prices went up considerably. So we saw that the global supply chain was changed indefinitely in favor of producers rather than consumers. Now we're seeing that the energy sector is also being changed and altered, and certainly not in the interests of consumers. There's lots of evidence of political idealism, and this is contributing to significant inflation. It's contributing to significant uncertainty and the insecurity of the energy sector and the fragility of markets overall. So this interference in markets is not coming out with positive outcomes. And then we can think about this whole argument around carbon pricing. So the carbon price, they have the objective of getting the price up towards 100. But what we're starting to see is supply disruption and leading to demand disruption. And the cure for high prices has always been high prices. So the carbon price is starting to come back down. And that would suggest that we're close to a peak for natural gas prices. But this is potentially only a short-term peak. We're still only in the beginning of autumn. And there is ample scope for surprises in terms of cold weather in the winter, and we'll still have a fragile environment in terms of the amount of gas and storage to allow for these types of events. So, on the one hand, there's likely to be a protest movement to try and get governments to pay attention to how prepared they are for a reliance on energy sources that are not reliable. And when the wind stops blowing, that the entire country shuts down, is risible. So the wind sector hasn't really moved. We can then think about the, for example, one of the only geothermal companies, Ormat Technologies, popped on the upside at the beginning of this year and came straight back down and has not moved. So there is a temptation to think that because of all these events, there should be a doubling down of investment in renewables, and that the actual challenge is that we don't have enough of them and we don't have storage capacity. So there should be much more investment in batteries. And certainly, we've seen lots of news headlines all promoting the same story about significant innovation in the solid-state battery sector, but nobody wants to talk about exactly when we're going to actually have them. And the lithium sector is also starting to ease in here. It's also particularly relevant to point out that a large number of these renewable energy business models are extraordinarily interest rate sensitive. So that's another good reason for why they have not been firing, despite the fact that energy prices are surging. On the other hand, it's the natural gas producers have started to pop on the upside. So Royal Dutch Shell has clearly broken out of its base formation, and it cleared it on Friday and has improved upon it in here this week. So this is suggesting that the significant investments the company has made in natural gas over the years are going to start paying benefits. Then in Australia, Santos, hasn't really been doing much of anything for the last few months because, or really since the announcement of the merger with Oil Search, but it is now firming within its base formation as well. When we then think about some of the coal burning fire stations, Drax Group in the UK is the last of the coal fired power stations, and it's looking at least like it has completed its base formation, but I think is potentially susceptible to some consolidation if natural gas prices start to come back down. So what we've had here is a taste of the supply disruptions that are potentially in our future. And this is really just a taste, because as we look at what the the future holds in terms of electric vehicles and demand on electricity, then significant additional generating capacity is going to be absolutely essential. And that generating capacity has to focus on base load. And neither wind nor solar provide base load. So it's either going to have to be something like geothermal, which is an emerging technology and not quite there yet, or it's going to have to be an established technology like nuclear. And that's another good reason why the uranium sector continues to hold its breakout. So the Global X uranium ETF, it's still consolidating and unwinding the short-term overbought condition, but this continues to look like a recovery scenario overall. Now, when we think about what's going on in China, well, attention seems to have moved on from China Evergrande and into the energy sector, and not least because there are significant closures of factories. But I think what's relevant is to also pay attention to what is going on with Evergrande, because trading in their bonds has increased, and the share was up 12 cents in here today, so it's not declining. And the Chinese government is pouring money into the economy, and they're going to have to continue doing that with the pressure in the stock market, pressure in the property market, and pressure in the energy market. Then there's just no way that the Chinese government can get away with abandoning the economy. So there's going to be a significant liquidity infusion from China, and it's likely to be on an ongoing basis. So that's positive overall. Capital is both global and mobile, so with China stimulating, then that is likely to be beneficial for everyone, and is also likely to ensure that the pullback we're seeing on stock markets is more akin to a reversion to the mean rather than a significant top formation. And I think that's also particularly relevant for Wall Street, that we're seeing the S&P 500, that it's susceptible to additional downside. They could fall another 200 points and still be in the region of the trend mean. And it might not even do that if we start to see bond yields starting to come back down. But of course, it's all predicated on liquidity. And that's also particularly relevant for what's going on in the cryptocurrency markets, because Bitcoin has been pulling back over the course of the last few weeks. It's testing the psychological 40,000 level. That's the upper side of the range that was put in between May and July. And we've had successive downward dynamics. And the biggest dynamics have been on the downside since the beginning of this month. So then there's still pressure on the downside. And the big question, of course, for Bitcoin, it's not about whether we're going to see technology updates coming through in November, for example, but rather where is the money going to come from to sustain the bull market? Because at a market cap of $1 trillion and a market cap for the whole crypto sector of $2 trillion, in order for the most bullish of the forecasts to be achieved, then the size of the market would have to be about 10 trillion. And where is that additional 8 trillion going to come from? It would be predicated on the potential for massive money printing. And we're just not there yet. So until we have an answer to where the money is going to come from, then there's the scope for additional downside. And if Bitcoin breaks on the downside, well, then there is a strong likelihood that it is going to take Ethereum with it. And I think the most relevant consideration on top of all of that is that we now have lower highs. So Bitcoin didn't get anywhere close to its peak. Ethereum got up to test it, and now it is pulling back. So the technical deterioration we've seen is extreme, and there's been a significant loss of momentum. In fact, we have the massive reaction against the prevailing trend in a period of right-hand extension. So it's, I think, quite easily arguable that we have top formation completion with right-hand extension. And if that's the case, then there is the potential that there could be significant downside. So I personally will not be getting back into cryptocurrencies until I see very, very deep oversold conditions. And that, of course, may or may not happen. And of course, then the other sector that has had a lot of downward dynamics is gold. But of course, gold also had the very big rebound off the lows in August. So it was in negative territory again today, and it's coming back down towards this psychological $1,700 area. And gold shares have also pulled back below the $30 area, and were a little steadier by are coming towards the close in here, but this is a break below the 30 area, and it is going to have to rebound in a significant manner in order to clearly demonstrate support in this area, because a failure to push back up into the overhead range, well, then it would suggest that we could be in for a lengthier period of consolidation. I think it is more likely than not that gold will be begin to attract that kind of interest in the not so distant future, but we don't have a lot of evidence to support it right now. So there's still plenty of uncertainty, and then we also have this overly comfortable environment where investors think that the problems are so large that additional massive liquidity infusions are absolutely inevitable. And it doesn't necessarily mean that that conclusion is incorrect, but other than that, the Federal Reserve is now in more of a tightening mode. They don't seem to be in the mood for providing additional assistance. So until that changes, well, then we're likely to be in a more volatile environment overall. The VIX index is up to about 23, and over the course of the last 6 months, we've seen meaningful lows when it gets up to 25. Now, it did get up to 25 earlier on today. So there is the potential now that we're going to have some buy the dip, and that prices will start to recover tomorrow. But we're still in a choppy environment, and there are still a lot of uncertainties. And as long as the 5-year yield is still above the 1% level, then the growth sector is also going to remain under pressure. And we've had some meaningful pullbacks in the semiconductors sector. So the SOX index has basically failed to sustain the breakout. And the one company that has basically got what is assumed to be a bulletproof business model, which is ASML, was down heavily in here today. So, the shutting down of manufacturing capacity for semiconductors in China because of the energy issues they're having there, well, that's also taking a toll on the semiconductor companies. And ASML is going to have to rebound in a really profound manner and do so soon if medium-term top formation completion is to be avoided. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.